And welcome to another episode of
Aprender Inglés with Reza and Craig.
Welcome to this award-winning podcast with over 40 years of teaching experience between us. Reza and I will help you improve your English and take it to the next level. In this episode for you, we have cars and driving. So we're going to help you expand your vocabulary and increase your knowledge of car and driving words in English. But first, we have some listener feedback, Reza.
Yes, we got some feedback all the way from Brazil.
Wow, Brazil.
From Nelson Garanhani. Hello, Nelson. Hope you're doing well. Thanks very much for your feedback.
Hi, Nelson.
He writes, Dear Craig and Reza, I come from Brazil and I started to learn English 2 years ago. I am a doctor and I have a son that is a veterinarian or a vet. Yesterday, after listening to this episode, inglespodcast.com/97, I sent it to him and later he told me that the podcast was really interesting. Thank you. And useful, and he had fun too. I'm feeling happy for having the opportunity. I think I would say I'm feeling happy to have the opportunity.
Yeah, that will be better.
To have the opportunity to listen to your brilliant podcast.
Oh, one second, because that's a common mistake when you translate Spanish, or maybe in Nelson's case, Portuguese, to English, because the adjective remains singular. So there's no S on brilliance. So it's just brilliant podcast. So although in Spanish you need the plural to agree with the noun, how would you say that in Spanish? Los podcasts brillantes with an S. Yeah. In English, no, just use the singular adjective. So good podcast, not goods podcasts. Yeah.
And he ends, many thanks from Nelson Garanhani in Brazil. P.S. Sorry, my mistakes. You mean sorry for my mistakes, Nelson? Sorry for my mistakes. Oh, well done, Nelson. Only a couple of minor mistakes. That's very well written.
And we're very pleased to have listeners in Brazil. So thank you for listening. Next, we have some audio feedback from Antonio. I think he's from Arcos de la Frontera. So let's listen to Antonio.
Hi, Reza. Hi, Greg. This is Antonio from Arcos de la Frontera. For your 100th episode, I must say that my English has improved a lot listening to your podcast. I need it for my job. I am a port pilot. I have to use some time. When I go on a holiday, I speak English with people. So thank you very much for your job. Now I want to make you a question, because you are English teacher. What do you think about the future of the handwrite languages? Because I think so that nowadays very few people speak write with a hand. They use WhatsApp or they use a voice message. So I think so that maybe in 60, 70 years, the handwriting is going to disappear. What do you think? Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you, Antonio, for sending us that feedback. Did you hear any mistakes from Antonio there, Reza?
I did hear a few, Antonio. You must be careful. You must be careful with the word must. You said must to say. I must say. So be careful with must, followed by infinitive without to.
Yeah, that's the same with any modal verb, full modal verb like should, can, must, might, may, etc. It's always infinitive without to. So I must say, I should say, I might go, etc. There was one other thing I think he said, I want to make you a question, should be ask you a question.
Yeah. That's a typical mistake by Spanish speakers, isn't it?
It is. So thank you very much for your kind wishes, Antonio, for our 100th episode. We appreciate it. And Antonio is asking if we think writing will disappear in 60 or 70 years from now. What do you think?
Well, I think he means handwriting.
Right,
by hand, not...
Not printed.
Writing.
Yeah, not books, which is another question, if books will disappear. But I think Antonio's asking about the influence of text messaging, WhatsApp, the way people write on the internet these days, how that will affect written English in the future.
Well, Craig, what about you? Do you write by hand every week, every day?
By hand, no, but I have noticed that the way I'm writing emails is very different to the way I wrote letters years ago. So my writing has become a lot more informal, and depending on the relationship I have with the person I'm writing to, then my writing changes. For example, if I have a quite a close relationship with someone, a friendly relationship, very informal, for example, with you, Reza, instead of writing Y-O-U for you, I might just write the letter U. I might use abbreviations. I might write Y-R for your, depending on the relationship I have with the person. So it's definitely changing. Writing is definitely changing because of the internet, because of messaging.
Antonio mentions WhatsApp and other things. In WhatsApp and also text messages, SMS text messages, people often use symbols nowadays. Smiley face, sad face, thumbs up for good, clap. Do you think they're here to stay? Will they increase? Will they stay about the same? Or what do you think will happen with the use of emoticons?
Yep, they're definitely part of our communication now, and I think they'll probably increase in frequency. I don't think they'll ever replace the written word, but we're definitely using them more and more as people's attention spans, their ability to concentrate, reduces. Then we're trying to write quicker, and we're trying to write as concisely and quickly as possible.
There's one emoticon I just can't understand. My class mentioned this the other day, a class I have face-to-face, old style, without any technology. They mentioned the smiley poo.
The smiley poo? What's a poo?
Or smiley turd, if you prefer. A turd, T-U-R-D, or a poo is excrement. And one of the emoticons, which I've never used in my life personally.
Me neither.
Is a smelly poo or a smelly turd. But you know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah, I've seen it.
What I don't understand is, I can understand there being a turd, a poo, you know.
Yeah.
Something, defecation, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, obviously something bad. But then why would it smile? Poo's not a good thing. There's nothing to smile about. Yet there is an emoticon which is a little smiley poo, a little smiley turd. I don't know why it exists. I can't see the use of it.
Maybe for a joke. So if you said something to me in a joking way and I wanted to send back something to let you know that I thought it was rubbish what you said, maybe I'd send you a smiley poo.
What do you think, Craig, Cervantes and Shakespeare would have made of all these emoticons? They were not long after the 400th commemoration of the death of both of those great artists. Would they have been impressed with smelly poo emoticons?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. And when I think of Cervantes and Shakespeare, can you imagine what it must have been like to be their teacher? Because somebody must have taught them English. Imagine having them as your students. How would you feel with that?
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? Said Juliet from the balcony. Can you imagine that Romeo was actually 10 meters away, but she decided to text him a WhatsApp, which is quite common these days? Smiley face, big heart beating, boop, boop, boop. Ooh, love you. Not quite the same.
Are you coming down to kiss me, Juliet? I'm smiley poo.
If she says no, then she'd probably get a smiley poo in response and a sulky face. Sulky is discontento. Oh, no kissy. Oh.
Mala leche. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, definitely changing, Antonio. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but the way that we write and communicate because of the internet is changing drastically. And as teachers, we teach differently to students who are about to take a formal examination in the way they write and communicate than if it were a more informal general English class. So there's the way that everybody communicates informally on the internet, and then there's the way that you should learn English in order to pass a formal exam. Thanks for your question.
Greg, let's get on to our main topic for today then, which is cars and driving.
Yes, driving on to the next section. Let's speak about cars and driving. First, some vocabulary. Possibly one of the most common expressions you hear in English is a driving license. Have you got a driving license? Do you have a driving license? Have you passed your driving test?
Craig, when did you get your driving license?
When I was 17, I think, or 18. 17 or 18, mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the UK. And you?
I was 30-something. I think I was about 33 or 4. I got mine very late.
Did you take your test here in Spain or in the UK?
In Spain.
And the theory test as well, because when I took my driving test, there was no theory, only a practical.
Now there's both parts, yeah.
Yeah. So you took your theory test in Spanish?
Yep.
Was it difficult?
Harder than the British one, I have to tell you, because I had previously done a driving test in Britain and failed it. But the theory part is harder in Spain than it is in the UK.
Really?
Yep.
And that's maybe the reason why Spanish people are better drivers.
Ooh, I don't know about that. But the theory test, in theory, but in practice, no, perhaps, yes.
Let's move on to some vocabulary. Brake, freno. And freno mano is handbrake. So brake, to break, it's a verb and a noun. So you put your foot on the brake to stop. And when you park, you pull up the handbrake. How do you say embrague in English?
That's clutch.
C-L-U-T-C-H. And accelerador?
In British English, accelerator. In British English, we'd say accelerator. But what would they say in American English?
Gas pedal. So gas is petrol, gasolina, and the gas pedal puts more gas in the engine. Mm-hmm.
Another difference between American English and British English is driving license in America is driver's license.
That's right.
With an apostrophe S, driver's license.
Yep. I'd forgotten about that. Now, some people drive with a baby in the car, so it's a good idea to put your baby in a baby seat in the back of the car and tie the seat to the back of the car with a seat belt, which, of course, you also must wear in the front of the car also. So seat belt is, in Spanish,
cinturón de seguridad.
Cinturón de seguridad. The thing at the back of the car where you put your shopping and suitcases and luggage is the boot in the UK, B-O-O-T, and in the US, trunk, T-R-U-N-K, boot and trunk. There are many Americanizations of British vocabulary for cars, strangely enough. So boot and trunk, are there any more that you can think of, Reza?
Yes, in British English, the front part of the car, which opens up where you can find the engine, is called the bonnet. But what's that called in American English?
That's the hood, H-O-O-D, hood. The same word if you have a hoodie, if you have a hood on your coat to protect you from the weather or the rain. It's the same word for the bonnet, B-O-N-N-E-T, at the front of the car, la tapa, for the engine.
Craig, could you describe a steering wheel?
Volante is the easiest way, just to say it in Spanish. So there are five wheels on the car, the four wheels that touch the road and the wheel you steer with, the steering wheel.
Craig, what do you call the piece of glass at the front of the car which protects it from the elements?
In British English or American English?
Well, do you know both?
In British English, it's the windscreen. The windscreen, wind as in viento, and wind shield in the US because it shields you from the wind. But if it's in the back of the car, I'd just say the rear window, the rear window. And the mirror that you use to look out of your rear window is the rear view mirror. It gives you a view of the rear. So a rear view mirror.
So the rear view mirror, it's actually in front of you, just above your head, right?
Yes, that's the small mirror you look up to that's just on the right.
So where are the wing mirrors?
The wing mirrors are outside the car, on the door usually, or on the wing of the car.
The wing's the side, isn't it?
Yeah, the side at the front.
If I said to you in American English, license plate, what would a British person perhaps say?
I would say a number plate. In Spanish, that's matricula.
Craig, do you know Jack?
My good friend Jack, yep.
Yep.
If I have a puncture, then I have a flat tyre, maybe a nail or something goes into the tyre. Tyre is pneumático. Then I need to raise the car, lift up the car to change the tyre or change the wheel. So I'd use a jack, my good friend Jack. Same as the name, J-A-C-K, gato in Spanish.
Another safety device, apart from seatbelts and child seats, are airbags. What are they?
Airbags, I think you have to have them by law in cars. Now, if you have a sudden impact, a crash, then a bag of air comes out from the steering wheel or from the place in front of you, if you're a passenger, to protect you from the crash and avoid injury.
Do you know the Spanish word for airbag?
Bolsa de aire?
Nope. Airbag.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. Couldn't resist that. Airbag.
So it's an airbag. Do you know what GPS stands for? That's what you need if you're like me and you get lost everywhere, including in your own flat. I get lost here. If you're driving and you have no sense of direction, it's a good idea to have a GPS on your phone or in your car.
The Global Positioning System.
That's right.
Also known as SatNav.
SatNav, yeah. Satellite Navigation, a SatNav or GPS.
Do you have one in your car, Craig?
No, I use my phone. I just have one on the phone, Google Maps, and just I use that. It's pretty good. Turn-by-turn navigation tells you where to go. And it's really funny because the woman who speaks on the on Google Maps has a American accent, but all the streets in Valencia are in Spanish. So I sit there and laugh at her pronunciation, which is as bad as mine. At the front of the car, you have something usually that protects the car from bangs and small knocks and crashes. It's a parachoques or paragolpes in Spanish. What's that in British English?
Well, you have it in case you bump into something else, so it's called a bumper.
And in America? In North America?
A fender.
A fender. F-E-N-D-E-R.
You said at the front and sometimes at the back as well. Sometimes there's a back bumper too, isn't there?
Depends. Yeah. In fact, I think in Valencia they're people think they're used as a parking aid to help you park. You just use them to smash into the car in front and then smash into the car in back while you're parking.
Yeah. In Britain, I'm not sure about in America, but in Britain, you're not ever supposed to actually use the bumper. It's not supposed to touch anything.
You're not supposed to touch anything with the bumper.
But I've noticed in some parts of Spain, it seems to be acceptable.
Yeah. This is quite sarcastic, but you're supposed to park in spaces that are slightly bigger than the car. Dan marcha atrás is to reverse into a parking space, to reverse your car.
So that would be reverse parking, something you've got to do to pass your driving test, yeah?
That's right, yeah.
In Britain anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, to move forward or backwards, you have to use your gears, marchas, G-E-A-R-S. So to put the car in gear is to select a gear, ponerlo en marcha. Mm-hmm. Put it in gear.
Americans don't say gears for cars which have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 gears. What do they say?
They say stick shift. Stick, S-T-I-C-K, shift. Because shift means to change. And actually, most cars in the US are automatic. In fact, I know some American friends of mine who don't know how to use gears because they've always owned an automatic car.
Which do you prefer, Craig?
I prefer a stick shift, as the Americans would say, or prefer gears. I just think I've just always driven with gears. And driving an automatic car will put me to sleep. It's boring. What about you? Do you prefer?
Well, I've never driven an automatic car, but I think I wouldn't like it as much.
It's a bit tricky because you only use one foot. So you just keep changing from the gas pedal or the accelerator to the brake, and the other foot automatically wants to go on the clutch to change gears. But I find it awkward because you have to completely forget your left foot.
But I suppose you could rest your feet then, because you could use either foot. You could, when you get tired of one foot, then swap to the other.
You could, but if you're naturally right-footed, it's quite awkward to do with a left foot, because it's kind of like picking up a pen and writing with your left hand if you're right-handed. But you can do it. You could do it, yeah. Any other words connected to driving?
Yes, we need to know, particularly in these days of environmental consciousness, what to call the pipe at the back where the smoke comes out of.
El tubo de escape.
Yes.
That's the exhaust pipe. E-X-H-A-U-S-T. The exhaust or the exhaust pipe. Do you think that's connected with to be exhausted?
Yes.
I feel exhausted.
If you feel exhausted, you've used up all your energy. So the exhaust pipe is for the smoke, which is created because you exhaust all the fuel. You use it up.
Well, yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Now, I said before that cars have five wheels, including a steering wheel, because my car only has five wheels. It used to have six. It used to have a spare wheel or a spare tire in the boot. These days, that's becoming less and less common. They give you like this can of liquid, and if you have a puncture, you put the liquid inside the tire and you can get to the nearest garage. But I remember when I was younger, a spare tire was always in your boot in case you had a puncture. Be careful of the spelling of tire. It's T-Y-R-E for a rubber tire. Mm-hmm. And to tire, the verb is T-I-R-E.
Unless it's in American English, when they're both spelt the same.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course.
Craig, have you got big headlights or big headlamps?
Big headlamps, yep. Fairly big. Yep. Fairly big. Headlights are faros. Yep.
Yes.
Is there a reason you're asking?
No, I'm just curious to know.
Yep. So headlights, when it's dark, you turn on the headlights. Yes. And to go left and right, you use your indicator, because you indicate where you're turning. If you're turning left, you indicate left. Turning right, you indicate right. Do Americans say indicate?
In theory, no. Yeah, in theory. We spent a lot of time in Valencia, and that's not always, strictly speaking, the case. But in theory.
Yeah, you should. You should. It's only polite to other road users to use your indicator. What do Americans call indicators?
Oh, I don't know.
Blinkers, maybe?
Oh, is that what they call them?
I'm not sure.
Maybe.
I think they're blinkers. And if you want to let somebody know that you are around, which is the correct use of your klaxon, then it's a car horn, or in British colloquial English, a hooter. So you make a noise with your car horn, you hoot to let people know that you are in the area. It's not supposed to be used as annoyance.
I see your face, Craig. You say it's not supposed to be, but you know places where it is used.
Oh, I do it. Okay. I mean, I do it. If somebody goes in front of me quickly or does something I don't like, I hoot them. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It seems to be more acceptable in Spain, or indeed Spanish-speaking countries, could be South America as well, compared to Britain. In Britain, people don't like it if you hoot them. You better have a good reason for hooting them.
Yeah.
You only do it in extreme circumstances.
In fact, I nearly got into trouble in the UK a couple of times for hooting people I shouldn't have hooted. Got quite angry.
Craig, I forgot to ask you one more question. How big is your hooter? Have you had big hooters in cars in the past?
I've got a very big hooter. Hooter is slang for nose. So you say...
No. I wasn't thinking. No.
Oh, you weren't thinking of that.
I said plural. Craig, have you got big hooters?
Oh, okay.
An American slang hooter is something else. Part of the female body. So Craig wouldn't have hooters at all.
But I was thinking of hooter as being another word for nose.
Oh, that's not what I meant. No, I said hooters. Have you ever had big hooters? Okay. I didn't know hooter was nose.
Yeah, Yeah. Okay. It is in London. Yeah. Okay. If you say he's got a big hooter.
I didn't know that.
He's got a big nose.
I was referring to hooters. Have you heard hooters as in part of the female body?
It's American also, English? I think it's also a restaurant, in a chain of restaurants in the US.
Where the women go around topless.
Women are topless. Yeah. So I hear.
I hear as well, yes.
So I hear. What's your opinion on double parking?
It shouldn't be allowed, but it happens a lot in certain places, doesn't it? So that's aparcar en doble filo.
Yeah, very common in Valencia. I don't know if it's common where you live, listeners, but in here, it's very common to double park and leave your handbrake off. So if your handbrake is off, it's easy to push the car so that you can reverse into a parking space or get out of a parking space.
Craig, when was the last time someone gave you a lift?
My dad gave me a lift a couple of days ago. My dad took me somewhere. To take someone in your car is to give them a lift. So a common expression would be, would you like a lift to the airport? Can I give you a lift to your hotel? Would you give me a lift tonight? I'm going out. To take someone, basically, in your car is to give them a lift.
And how would they say it in North America? To give someone a ride? No,
not sure.
Can I give you a ride?
Give you a ride.
Yep. Okay. They don't say give a lift, they say to give a ride.
I think this is quite a British expression, to run someone somewhere. For example, can I run you to the station? Means can I take you to the station. Would you say that in Belfast?
Yeah.
Can you run me to the shops?
What about to run someone over? That's entirely different.
Yes, the phrasal verb to run over.
Atropellar,
right.
So the man ran over the child accidentally. Mm-hmm. El hombre atropelló al niño. Yeah.
Yeah. Or to run over an animal, run over a dog. Someone who's in the back of the car or next to you even, who tells you how to drive, who tells you you're driving very badly, we can say they are a backseat driver. A backseat driver.
So you've got the front seat or front seats and the back seat. Craig, have you ever done anything strange or interesting in the back seat of a car?
I think we'll save that for another podcast.
That's another podcast, yeah. We don't want to get that X certificate, do we? I was just asking an innocent question.
Yeah.
You know me, listeners.
I'd have to go back a long, long way, many years, to think of things I've done in the back of my car.
Okay. Let's move on forward then.
Let's drive on. There are a few expressions about going fast, speeding. For example, I could say to put the pedal to the metal means to push down the accelerator to go very fast. So you're pushing the pedal to the metal of the car.
That's the same as to put your foot down.
Yeah, put your foot down means go faster. Like, come on, put your foot down, go faster, accelerate.
Of course, there's another meaning of put your foot down. Phrasal verbs, as you know, listeners, they all often have more than one meaning. To put your foot down can mean to impose a limit, a completely different meaning. Imagine my son is always asking me for money and I give him money. And one day he says, yeah, Dad, I need more money. I said, no, you've had enough. I'm not giving you any more. I must put my foot down. You've reached the limit. That's it. That's an entirely different meaning. Put your foot down.
And of course, there's also the literal meaning of lift your foot up and put your foot down. So there's the literal meaning and the idiosyncratic meaning of being firm or being strict with someone. Americans wouldn't say put your foot down necessarily. What would they say?
Maybe step on the gas.
Yeah. Step on the gas, bro. Go faster.
There's an expression I often use, but it might be an Irish thing. I'm not sure if it's common all over Britain. To sink the boot.
No, I haven't heard that.
Okay, it might be an Irish thing. Sink the boot.
Sink like undir. Yeah. Sink the boot.
Because when you put your foot down, then the boot tends to go down. The front of the back of the car will go down. Yeah. The
right.
boot will go down
yeah.
whenever you accelerate quickly.
Oh,
it?
I see. So
that's why it's to put...
It's the boot of the car, not the boot on your foot.
No, to sink the boot, because when that happens, doesn't the back of the car go down?
Yep. With the power of the engine. I haven't heard that.
I think it might be a Belfast thing, to sink the boot.
Have you heard this expression? It's very common in London, to give it some welly.
I have heard that, yeah. I like that expression.
Welly is like a Wellington boot. So to give it some welly is another synonym for go faster. Put your foot down. Give it some welly. Sink the boot. There are some expressions with the word drive that we could look at. For example, to drive someone mad or to drive someone round the bend. What does that mean?
Or up the wall, you could say. Or
to
to
drive someone up the wall. When would you use that?
To irritate a person, to make them very angry, or to really bother them. You're driving them up the wall, etc.
Can you think of something that drives you up the wall or drives you round the bend? A person or a thing?
People being extremely noisy at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when you're trying to sleep, that drives me around the bend.
People double parking sometimes so that there's no room to go past, that drives me around the bend.
People sounding their horn repeatedly at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning when they know others are trying to sleep. I wish people wouldn't do that.
People not indicating when they're in front of you and they just turn when they feel like it drives me around the bend. We could go on and on, I think. What about to drive a hard bargain?
Oh, that's an idiomatic expression, isn't it?
Bargain is ganga, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's actually nothing to do with driving again. It simply means to be a tough negotiator. Yeah. For example, in business, the person who's buying wants to pay less. The person who's selling wants them to pay more. They negotiate and they drive a hard bargain, perhaps. They try to push the other person to the limit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because drive can sometimes have the meaning of like to push very hard. So you're pushing a hard deal. I mean, you're driving a hard bargain. And also if you drive a price up, or drive the price down, you're pushing it up with force or pushing it down. For example, the internet is driving down the price of teaching because there are so many people teaching online. It's getting less and less. Prices are dropping. So teaching online is driving lesson prices down.
Yes, in fact, you can even listen to marvelous podcasts for free. For free.
Or you could study with iTalki. How's that for a transition? Should we do that now?
Yes. Tell us more about iTalki.
Well, speaking of driving down the price, and you can't really get cheaper for a quality online lesson than going to our sponsors, iTalki. Because iTalki is a website where you can find teachers to teach you English online over Skype. They're native teachers. You use technology like Skype and you learn when you want to study, when it's convenient for you. So really, you're taking out the man in the middle. You're taking out the language school and you're dealing directly with a teacher. It's a personal service. It's a customized service. And there's that human connection. You're not learning with applications or software. And if you'd like to know more, iTalki are offering listeners of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig 100 iTalki credits, which is about one free lesson, to each paying student that registers with them. So to find out more, go to inglespodcast.com/iTalki. And Reza and I would like to thank iTalki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Can you think of any more expressions, Reza, with drive?
There's the expression to drive a point home.
Of course. Yeah.
Now, it's nothing to do with driving a car and it's nothing to do with your home either. What does it mean, Craig?
To drive a point home means to emphasize something. For instance, the example we used before we spoke about the iTalki sponsorship. If you study online, now that's driving down the price of English lessons, so it's better for the student. And if I wanted to drive that point home, I could use the iTalki website as an example of this. So I'm really pushing home the point or the idea by a very strong, vivid example to drive a point home.
Craig, our podcasts are pretty successful. What do you think is the driving force behind them? What makes them work?
La fuerza detrás. The driving force, I would say the community, the wonderful community we have of listeners with their feedback and being so willing to participate. So the community of listeners, I think, is the driving force behind this podcast. What are you driving at? You could say, what do you mean?
What do you mean?
What's your intention? Yeah. What are you driving at? What's your point?
If someone's being vague or not explaining themselves well, that's what you can say to them.
So for clarification, you could say, what are you driving at? What do you mean?
Craig, do you like being in the driving seat?
When I'm in a car, you mean?
In general.
In general. You mean, do I like being in control?
Yeah, that's it. Do you?
Well, what do you think? You know me quite well.
I think sometimes yes, sometimes no. Not specifically. I don't think you're obsessive about it, no. What do you think?
Sometimes I think, yeah. Sometimes I think I like to be in control a little bit. It depends, though. It depends. If it's really, really important to me for some reason, then probably I do. But I think with most things, I'm quite easygoing, which is maybe the opposite of being in the driving seat. Would you agree? To be easygoing, to be laid back.
So sometimes you like to take a back seat.
Yes, exactly.
Which is the opposite of being in the driving seat.
That's interesting. So yeah, sometimes I take a back seat.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
The same. Same as you. It depends on the occasion. Depends how important it is for me. It depends how comfortable I feel in that particular environment.
Have you heard of this expression, which I hadn't heard of? I had to Google it. It's to drive the porcelain bus.
I had never heard it before. I'm just looking at it now.
Me neither. Porcelain is porcelana, no? So if you vomit profusely or vomit a lot into the toilet because you've been drinking too much alcohol, there's an expression that Reza and I were not aware of, but it's quite popular on the internet, to drive the porcelain bus. John was driving the porcelain bus for the rest of the night after his seventh tequila shot.
Craig, has anything or anyone ever driven you to drink?
No, but there's a quote, isn't there? A famous quote from W.C. Fields, I think. My wife drove me to drink. And I didn't have the decency to thank her.
So when he says, my wife drove me to drink, he means my wife was the reason I started drinking.
Out of desperation.
So annoying or so terrible. Exactly. Yeah, so if something drives you to drink, it's so annoying or so terrible, so stressful that it makes you drink.
My work has
driven me to drink. I'm so stressed by it.
That was my question. Have you ever had any students that have driven you to drink?
Never any students, no. That's never happened to me. And you?
No, they're too nice. They're too nice.
I've had a friendly drink with students after class, but I've never been driven to drink by any.
So that's quite a negative expression. If something drives you to drink, you're so desperate that you have to go and get drunk to forget it.
Craig, do you mind if I ask you a few more questions about your experience of driving?
Go ahead.
You're
in the driving seat.
Okay. You just take a back seat and I'll ask a few questions.
I'll take a back seat. You put the pedal to the metal.
You said that you got your driving test when you were about 17. You got your driving license.
Yeah, fairly early. Yeah. My dad taught me. I also practiced with my mom, and then I had about 10 or 15 lessons before the test.
Can you remember the type of car that you'd learnt in?
I can. It was a Ford.
Yep.
I think, yes, it was a Ford Fiesta. And my first car that cost me about £400, I think, was a Ford Escort Mark II. 1972.
I remember them well.
Yeah.
And tell me this, Craig. Do you remember much about what happened in the driving test?
I remember I nearly hit a bus. I was going around a roundabout. which in America is a traffic circle, a roundabout, rotonda.
Which they don't have many of. There are very few in America.
There are, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not common in America. And there was a bus that pulled out for some reason. I didn't nearly hit it, but there was a moment where I thought, oh no, I failed my test because of the bus thing. So it was an awkward situation. I wasn't sure whether to brake or to accelerate, and I braked, but I passed. So mm-hmm. it wasn't a disaster. Do you remember your test?
Which one? Because I didn't pass the first time.
Why didn't you pass the first time? Ooh. Did they give you a reason?
Yeah, various reasons. My very first driving test, I simply failed to do the emergency stop. Mm-hmm. There's a thing in a British test which doesn't exist in the Spanish test, as far as I know, or it didn't a few years back, where they say, at some point I will make a signal. This is the driving examiner. He says, I will make a signal and you must make an emergency stop. That means brake in the shortest time possible.
And they hit the dashboard of the car, don't they? Is the part of the car at the front with the dials and the petrol gauge and everything.
And that's a signal for ignore everything else and make your emergency stop now.
Stop as quickly as possible.
As safely as you can. And it's an integral part of the test. Well, I was so nervous that I just simply didn't see him make the signal. So I didn't do the emergency stop. I didn't do anything wrong. It's just that I didn't do it. And he said 5 minutes later, he said, what about the emergency stop? And I said, yeah. Whenever you like. He said, no. I signaled for it 5 minutes ago. And I said, ah. He said, you may now drive back to the test center, Mr. Shaw.
And that was the reason why.
That's the signal when they say, you may now drive back to the test center. If they say that very quickly, it means you failed. They don't need to see anymore.
That's a shame.
And then another time I did the reverse parking badly. And another time I didn't brake quickly enough coming up to a zebra crossing. And I didn't go onto the crossing, but I slightly startled, I suppose.
What does startle mean?
I surprised a pedestrian walking across the zebra crossing because I just approached it a bit too quickly.
Yeah.
And so I stopped. But because they had been a little bit frightened, a bit startled, understandably, the examiner didn't like that, and so he failed me. I deserve to fail for that.
Mm-hmm. But you got there in the end. You passed here in Spain, and now you have your driving license.
I did.
Have you ever had any problems? Because you've driven in Belfast, and they drive on the left-hand side in Belfast, and they drive, obviously, on the right-hand side here in Spain. Do you ever have any problems switching from driving on the left to driving on the right?
Not really, but I imagine it would be tricky if you drove a long distance, if you made an international journey and you started driving on one side and had to change to the other. That must be tricky. Have you ever done that?
Once I went the wrong way around. Do you remember, listeners, the word for rotonda in English? The roundabout. When I came back to Spain, after driving on the left in the UK, I went round the roundabout the wrong way. And luckily there were no cars coming and I quickly sort of changed. But that was quite scary.
Tell me, Craig, apart from Britain and Ireland, can you name any other countries where they drive on the left-hand side of the road?
Well, there are quite a few, aren't there? There must be, I don't know, 40 or 50 or more. But obviously Ireland, and then there's the countries that used to be part of the British Empire, like Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Malta. I know India and Pakistan.
Yes, and Bangladesh.
And Bangladesh.
And Sri Lanka.
And Sri Lanka, of course.
And Burma.
Yep. Japan, I think, drives on the left.
Although Japan, of course, has no connection with the British Empire, but they just drive on the left.
So why... Do you know how it started? Why do some countries drive on the left and some countries drive on the right?
If I'm not mistaken, the original side to drive is the left. The original side to drive on is the left.
And how far?
When it was horses and carts, we're talking many centuries ago, long before cars were invented.
Well, back to the time of the Romans, you mean?
Yes. The standard side to drive was the left, and it was later that it changed to the right. Is that correct?
I think so. Maybe it was because of, like, they had swords or weapons. So in order that you could see if somebody was armed, if they had a sword or a weapon, then you had to approach them from the left. And then, you know, you'd use your right hand to fight, so then you could just wave if they had no weapons, if they were not aggressive. But then, of course, with the British Empire, they started spreading driving on the left to other countries. And I think the first country in Europe that changed to the right was France, and Napoleon spread it through the countries that he conquered, I think.
I would imagine that all or nearly all ex-British colonies continue to drive on the left. Of course, the big exceptions are the United States, they mm-hmm. drive on the right.
They're on the right.
And Canada, they yep. drive on the right. But the Australians and New Zealand, etc., they still drive on the left.
What about South America or Central America?
All on the right.
All on the right?
Yeah. All on the right.
Spanish influence,
and then these days, the American influence.
Okay.
Shall we park that episode there,
yeah,
Craig?
I think we should park it there. I think we should pull up the handbrake, turn off the engine, and park this episode where it stands. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. We would like you now to practice your English. So please, if you have a question or a comment for us, or if you just want to say hello, we'd love to hear from you. Send us a voice message. Go to speakpipe, that's speakpipe.com/English podcast. Of course, you can also leave us a voice message on our homepage at englishpodcast.com. Or if you prefer to write, send us an email to me, Craig, at englishpodcast.com.
Or to me, Reza, at belfastreza@gmail.com.
And on next week's episode, we'll be talking about lifestyles, different lifestyles that people have and how they live their lives in different ways. So until then, it's goodbye from Reza.
And it's bye-bye from Craig.
Goodbye. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.